All right, let's call the Judiciary Committee to order. Apologize to everybody in the world for being late, but the floor session took us down this road, so here we are. It's 2:35. We have Senator Olson, Senator Dyson, Senator McGuire, Senator Coghill, Chairman. The order of business was to be HGR 22, then HB 255, and then SGR 20. HGR 22 is Representative Wilson on Federal Constitutional Convention. We'll have her introduce that, but I think what we'll do is we'll take up House Bill 255, which is by Representative Hughes on unmanned aircraft systems, and I think it's very, very similar to the bill we passed out of committee here just a couple weeks ago. So what we'll do is why don't we have Ginger come up? Ginger is with staff to Representative Hughes. And if you'll take your packet and turn to the House Bill 255, I understand there was some word changes in here, so if you wouldn't mind.
All right.
And introduce yourself.
Thank yes. You. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ginger Blaisdell, and I am staff to Representative Shelley Hughes. And there is just a two-word change from the difference between House Bill 255 and Senate Bill 138 that was just passed, or 136 that was just passed a couple of weeks ago here. On page, let me make sure I tell you the right page. The bottom of page 2, line 29 and 30, the statement reads that an unmanned aircraft system could be used by law enforcement to gather evidence in a criminal investigation under express terms of a search warrant issued by, and it used to say AS 1235, which is the Code of Criminal Practices, and it was very broad. And in House Judiciary, they took away the statutory reference and simply put by a search warrant issued by a court. This way there is the law enforcement would have to contact a court to get the search warrant. It wouldn't just be a broad allowance by statute. And then you have another person reviewing the actual use of that unmanned aircraft. And that was the rationale for the change of that two-word.
So the language I see, Ginger, is mm-hmm. on line 31, accordance with judicially recognized exception. Is that, or am I looking at a different version?
Which version do you have?
I have the Y version.
I have Y version, and I have the bottom of page 2, line 29, starts with, under the express terms of a search warrant issued by a court,
or in accordance with a judicially recognized exception.
Oh, yes.
I think that was still new language, wasn't it? Is that new?
That was in the original. That was in the Senate bill version as well.
Right. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And I think just for those listening, I wanted to bring that up only in that the we have Senator Wilkowski joined us. I don't know that it's that big of a deal, but just give us an idea what judicially recognized exemption would be. Could you help us with that, just to make sure that that's on the record? Because that's what a court's going to look at, probably. Do you have any of that?
And I would love to tell you that. Annie Carpinetti from the Department of Law typically described those examples, so I would hate to misstate something.
For me, I'm going to probably do a little research on that so that when we get to the floor, I can speak to it. But I don't know that it's something we need to go into any great detail in this committee. But I think it's something we need to let people know what we're doing here, and that was that caught my eye again. So,
okay.
Any other questions for Ginger at this point? Senator Dyson, you want to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for House Bill 255 Judiciary / Y version from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving the CS for House Bill 255 Judiciary from committee? Senator Wilkowski.
Is there another committee hearing, another committee on this?
This will go to the rules. So...
Is this the first hearing on this, or...
We've actually had this bill in front of committee.
Okay.
It's probably when you were...
I must have just missed it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This, we had two hearings on the other one. This is exactly the same version, bar those two words.
All right, thank you.
So, any other objection? All right, with no objection, we've moved CS for House Bill 255 from committee with individual recommendations. Let's take in at ease while we sign the recommendation sheet. Come back on record, and next thing on our list is House Rent Resolution 22. This is going to be the first hearing on it in committee, and my intention is just to have it heard, but I want to be able to get to this as soon as we can as far as movement, but I wanted to give the representative ample time to present it.
I appreciate
Introduce
that.
Yourself.
For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, North Pole Fairbanks area, and I appreciate you hearing the resolution today. I think some of you have probably already heard it on state affairs, and so with that, article our forefathers really saw that there could always be an issue along the way in which the states might need another way to be able to bring amendments to the Constitution, and with that is what's called the Convention of the States. But it has a very high bar. It's not something you just take light. And what it takes is that you must, 34 states must pass a resolution, and then that resolution would go to the Congress, who would then call a Convention of the States. At that time, then, the states would then determine through resolution or a bill on how they were going to choose their delegates, what their delegates would choose to be able to do at that meeting, anywhere from actually sending amendments, and that's all they could do, or speaking about the topics. And in HJR 22, you will notice that there's only three topics that are covered underneath this, and that would be to impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and limit the terms of office of federal government officials. Anything outside of that would not fit the call. If an amendment was reached, agreement with those 34 states at that time, they would go back to state legislatures, and then they would have to be approved by 38 state legislatures. And when I talk about being approved, pretty much it means word for word would have to be that, because that would be the amendment that would be added. So any changes would void out that amendment. So as you see, although the Founding Fathers gave us an opportunity to be able to basically push back on the federal government, they made sure that it had a high threshold so that it wasn't taken light. And I know one of the big concerns that we have heard is that it would be a runaway convention and anything could happen. Well, as you can tell, that would be very difficult. It would be hard for me to believe that if 34 states could come to a convention with their delegates, everybody gets one vote, come up with an amendment, and everybody agree word for word what that is, send it back to all 50 states, in which 38 would then have to ratify it, and that happened, it would be very hard for me to say that something was wrong with that. So with that, that is the basis of the resolution, and I will take any questions you may have.
I have a couple. I get to hear this in the state affairs, I think, in some a little different iteration, but so how many states, Representative, have to actually sign on to this to turn it into a honest-to-goodness call on the Congress?
Mr. Chair, 34.
34, okay. And, yeah, where are we at?
Right now we're at one. And we would, and that's not us, it's Georgia. However, Arizona has theirs through the House. And into the Senate, we have several states that there's about 12 states in the different processes. What was interesting about Georgia's was that they passed out a different one from the House and the Senate, and so they had to come to agreement with it, and that's what we've mirrored ours out from is Georgia. And again, the further away each resolution comes from each other, it would be easy for the Congress to say, well, they don't match, and that's why the big emphasis on trying to be as closely related as possible.
Yeah, I think you have a supporter here, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I think you put his microphone.
I was surprised to find out that the Senate passed, or the House, the legislature passed a similar one about 22 years ago.
Yeah.
Fritz Pettyjohn and Robin Taylor met me in Chicago to explain that to me.
We do have some people that wanted to testify. Unless you have further questions, I'd like to get, we got three people to testify, and we got one online, we got two in the room. And if you don't mind,
no problem.
Representative. So Michael Ferris, you're online. This is a very compressed meeting, unfortunately. So if you could put yourself online and give us as brief a testimony as you can. I don't want to throttle you back too much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the privilege of being able to watch you while testifying. So this is a really advanced set of benefits that you have that people can watch you. So thank you very much. I'm a constitutional lawyer. I litigate and do appellate work. I teach constitutional law at Patrick Henry College. I've represented four Washington state legislators in an Article 5 dispute back in the 70s and 80s when Congress attempted to change the ratification process for the Equal Rights Amendment midstream. So I'm one of the few lawyers in the country who've actually litigated an Article 5 case. What Representative Wilson told you is the essence of the resolution that I helped to craft, and the topics in an application that you have before you must match. The states set the topic for any constitutional amendments convention by this process that we're engaged in now. There have been over 400 applications filed in Congress in the history of the Republic, but we've never had a convention because there's never been agreement on the subject matter. 34 states have to agree on the subject matter. Then all 50 states would attend the convention. 26, by a simple majority vote, would approve the text of any proposed amendments, you know, on the topics that are germane under the application that's been approved. And then 38 states would have to ratify the specific text. It would be up or down votes in both houses. So, indeed, the political reality is that nothing that would be a dangerous or a preposterous or crazy kind of an amendment could ever get through this process. There are many, many checks and balances. And so, you know, the founders understood that the only way Washington, D.C. would ever have real limitations put on its power is through this process. Congress will never propose things that require fiscal restraints or any kind of limitations on its power. It's up to the states to do that, and we're hoping that Alaska will be the second state to join in this process to put these kind of restraints on the federal government. So with that, I would yield to questions that any of you might have.
Thank you, Michael. I think that helped answer one of the questions. I remembered the last testimony. The 38 and the 34 kind of got wrapped around in my head. So the 34 need to put forward the resolution, and the 38 need to ratify whatever comes out of that convention. So that's where I did get wrapped around on that a little bit. So thank you for clarifying that. And since you have been such a proponent of this, with these three subjects, are we more likely or less likely to get Congress to act? And this is a total discretionary to Congress, the way I understand it. True?
Mr. Chairman, actually not. Congress has no discretion whatsoever. Their duty to call a convention is mandatory. If we get to 38 states and the agreement on the subject matter is clear, Congress has no realistic alternatives. They must call the convention. The language of the Constitution is mandatory. I'm totally confident that if it came to it, both the states and the judiciary would rise up and tell Congress to get in their place. And I predict no difficulty whatsoever in winning a lawsuit or otherwise winning through the legislative process. I don't anticipate that at all. Frankly, I think that Congress will say, let's roll the dice. They will count on the fact that it takes 38 states to ratify to protect them from losing any power. But we're convinced that 38 states will see the light of day and will make sure that we have a more appropriate balance of power between the states and the federal government to protect the people.
I think one of the other things, Michael, and you probably can speak to this better than I can, but it seemed to me like if you had 34 states and you actually called a convention, that is no small political move. That would be probably a nationwide debate that would include ratification. At that point, if you got agreement on the subject matter, you're talking about a pretty major political earthquake in America, I would imagine.
That's exactly right, Mr. Chairman. I think that Congress will make its decisions under what they feel like they have to do and what they can get away with. And I think that the fact, just as you've outlined, the grassroots activity that would take, I don't think that Congress would dare to rile up that many state legislators and that many grassroots activists that have worked so hard, because I think, frankly, they would think that the state legislators would rise up and put them out of office, so and the grassroots would help them. So I don't think that the political considerations as well as the legal considerations, I think, ensure that Congress will do its duty.
Thank you. I do have two other people to testify. If you'll stay online, I would greatly appreciate it in case we have other questions. But I've got two, and why don't both of you come forward. I got Don Brand and Dan, is it Gitman? Okay, got it. Okay, gotcha. I see that now. All right. If I just read what I had in front of me, I'd have known that. Don, thank you very much for coming before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me this opportunity. My name is Don Brand. I'm one of those grassroots volunteers that Mr. Ferris just referred to. I am the Alaska legislative liaison for the Convention of States Project.
Don, why don't you pull that microphone a little closer to you there?
Okay.
For those who need, those who are online need to hear that. Thank you.
Okay. I'm a very concerned American and an even more concerned Alaskan about the direction that our federal government is going in. And I think this approach is probably our last best chance to actually do anything about it. So with that, I will be very brief. I urge you to support and pass along this resolution, and I can also answer any questions if you have any.
Is there any questions for Don? Greatly appreciate your volunteer work, and I think that's what it's going to take to make America kind of settle down to take care of its debt issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You and millions others, I'm hoping. Thank you very much. Is there any questions for the sponsor at this point? I know, I think three of us were on a previous committee that heard this, and so it ended up here. Personally, I like the idea. I think when I saw it with the member to my left here, I think I voted for it to go out of committee. So it's a resolution. You sure there's no questions for the sponsor? I do have one other bill I'd like to get on the table today. So, I know that three of us heard it. Senator Dyson, any comments on this? Take a brief please. All right, we'll come back in order. Part of the question was my staff ready with the actual bills, because my communication style, I miscommunicated on having all the bills in front of us. House Joint Resolution number 22 actually has had a hearing in another committee, which three of us were on, had been voted out. This is the same bill, basically. I think we're talking about the Article 5 Constitution and making a resolution to urge the other 49 states to apply to a convention of the states. So, Senator Dyson, do you want to make a motion? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Joint Resolution 22 amended That's the backslash, let's see, it's 28 LS 1213 backslash U.A from committee with individual recommendations.
We did not amend it. It came to us with a language, different language, just for what it's worth. Is there any objection to moving this from committee? All right. It's your day, Representative. So House Senate Resolution 22 will move to the next committee referral, which I do believe is rules. All right, we'll take a brief of these and we'll sign the two. Call the Judiciary Committee back to order. And the next thing that we're going to do is we're going to take up the Senate Joint Resolution 20, and we have a new CS before us, which looks like the end version. And why don't I have Senator Dyson, why don't you just move that we get the end version before us? I'll object so that we can have the Senator explain the differences.
What I've got is the U.
I guess this version here.
Huh. All right. Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt as our working version the CS for Senate Joint Resolution number 20. That's the backslash N version.
And I'll object so that we can hear it. Just remind me that I've objected before we do anything else. So, Senator Wilkowski, how do you want to proceed on this resolution?
I'll just speak very briefly, Mr. Chair, if I could. This is slightly changed, the CS, but this stems from the issue of sexual assaults in the military. And I won't read through all the whereases, but I think we're all aware of the problem that exists out there. There's about 20% of the women who serve in the military experience sexual trauma. There's tens of thousands of assaults that occur. And currently, the way the process works is that you go within your chain of command. And this has presented a lot of problems. There's a number of veterans organizations. You have a list of other organizations that support changing it to take it outside of the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
I would point out the governor just today did exactly what we're suggesting, which with the National Guard here in Alaska. There's been some serious concerns raised about sexual assaults in the National Guard, and he asked, and the National Guard granted him the ability to have an independent review outside the chain of command. So I'm glad to see that it's recognized here in Alaska, and I have some people who are online who can testify a little bit more. If you have detailed questions about the resolution, my staff is here to answer any of your questions. Thank you.
Sounds like to me very timely. There's several things that make it very timely. Certainly the governor's request for an independent assessment, the fact that we're working on a choose respect issue, I think is very important. And this is actually a petition to Congress who has labored under a couple of different ways to move forward. And this is just really saying, let's get something done,
yeah.
It sounds like to me. So, Reneva, I think we have some people that may be online. Sorry, I didn't have a list. What we'll do is, unless there's questions for the sponsor or the sponsor's aide, what we'll do is we'll go to, we have Rick Davidge and Keely Olson. And Rick, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. I can hear you very well. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you for coming before the committee. Why don't you put yourself on the record, your affiliation and the testimony, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Walchowski, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Rick Davidge. I am just finished up my term as the National Chairman for Government Affairs for Vietnam Veterans of America. And I continue to serve as the Chairman of Government Affairs for Vietnam Veterans of America, Alaska. About 3 years ago, while National Chairman, we initiated this legislation. After listening to, I would say, almost a dozen national organizations specifically concerned at that time with sexual assault on women, but now we know the rate of sexual assault on men is greater in actual numbers than on women in service today. And I'm just frankly overwhelmingly delighted with the governor's actions today. It's unfortunate, but it is simply a fact of life in service that the chain of command cannot be trusted, I hate to use that word, to address this problem. If you have an employee in your business who is assaulted by somebody in your business, you as the owner of that business don't get to decide whether that person is punished or not. In service, that's the way it's been going on. We've just finished reading day after day of another general officer accused for multiple sexual assaults. But the only ones we really hear about are the general officers. Let me assure you that most of this sexual assault activity takes place at the sergeants and in the lower ranks, company commanders, executive commanders, etc. So the bottom line for us is, frankly, we need to get this specific item out of the chain of command. Hopefully, we now have over 30,000 sexual assaults committed in the service, and less than a tenth of those are actually reported, and less than another tenth are actually filed, and you end up with a couple of hundred to go to trial, and maybe less than 100 that ever make it through trial. We need to get this outside, and the main thing is, and it's one of the things that the governor is talking about with his respect initiative, we need to empower the victims. Most victims of sexual assault in the service will report that they see some retribution once they report. So they're afraid to report. Not only afraid to report with respect to the effect that will have on the person that assaulted them, but the entire chain of command looks back at them as some sort of disloyal person within the chain. We just need to get this out of the chain of command, get it within the formal prosecutorial investigative process, that's already set up within service, and if there's a problem with respect to civilian authority, et cetera, we've worked that out quite well in Alaska, particularly if the assault takes place off base. And just ensure that, number one, the people that are being hurt in service are, one, enabled and empowered to speak up, two, feel confident that they're not going to be harmed as a result of their complaint. Certainly there'll be an adequate investigation. And that when punishment comes down, that it will be ruled by court-martial, not by some commanding officer. I'd be glad to take any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Rick. Senator Wilkowski?
Not a question, but Rick, I know you've been holding for an hour and a half for this, and I just want to thank you. I know you volunteer, and you've been, I don't think there's many stronger advocates than you out there for veterans in active duty. So I just want to thank you for all you've done.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator. Let me just say that we are very unhappy with the results in Congress, and the Senate, Senator Wachowski and his staff has helped recraft this in this committee substitute so that it speaks to the broader issue and not specifically a particular bill. I can assure you that this will be a top item every Congress until we get this resolved, and certainly having the states speak out, and all 50 states have been asked to speak out about this now, to their members in Congress and saying, look, we've got to fix this problem. And I think having someone like Governor Parnell step up and say, look, we're going to change this in the Guard really helps set the tone.
Yeah. And I'll add my thanks to your effort along with Senator Wilkowski. So we do have Keely Olson on, who's with Standing Together Against Rape, and I wanted to give Keely opportunity to speak. So, Keely, can you hear us?
Hello, thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Senator Wachowski. I would like to just introduce myself as being with the organization Standing Together Against Rape in Anchorage, Alaska, also home of Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson, and we have the National Guard staged here as well. So we're very familiar and have worked with numerous victims of sexual assault who may choose to connect with a not-for-profit, non-governmental agency for support and services, who have specifically noted that they are not choosing to report because of fear of retaliation. It's not an anecdotal type of situation. It is time and time again that our staff, who are advocates and able to respond and help with guiding people through all kinds of options for reporting within the municipality of Anchorage, within the state of Alaska, our hands are somewhat tied when it comes to the way that the military investigates and the way that they take reports of sexual assault and rape. So as the sole standalone sexual assault response agency in the state of Alaska, STAR very much supports this, and certainly supports the overall National Congress in making some changes. I agree with the previous speaker who was testifying, stating that this is certainly timely. It is certainly going to be a matter where state-by-state citizens and people who are involved in the military are demanding a change, and that the states have to kind of lead the charge for our federal Congress to step up and realize maybe the significance. I think it's wonderful that there is change coming, because really when you're in the job of providing options to people and there are few to offer, it does not help with increasing reporting. It doesn't help with increasing awareness about the problem. It does not offer any type of justice to the victims that are coming forward about the violence imposed against them, and the ongoing construct of control that is set up, especially when the perpetrator is within their chain of command. So we are very much in support of this action, and I'd be happy to certainly take any questions that you might have.
Is there any questions for Gilia, thank you very much for taking the time to catch up with us in committee. I know we didn't make it any easier, and for Rick as well. I don't know that there's going to be a heavy-duty debate in this committee. We've dealt with this issue in many, many ways. So is there any other comments at this point, Senator Dyson?
Well, just like to make the comment that I appreciate that the sponsor and the resolution we have behind us makes it clear that males are the victims as well. And that's always honestly astonishing to all of us who are straight, if I can use a politically incorrect term, that that this happens. And now for sexual assault against children, it's right around a third, and has been of our little boys, which has been consistent for two decades that I've been paying attention, or a little more, and it's startlingly high in the military. And I appreciate that, and I just bring it up because I think the knee-jerk reaction of all of us is to think it's young women, and it's not. And there's no way to diminish the impact upon the young women. Thank you.
Any other
comments? Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct that this does affect a huge number of men in the military as well. And it's important to look at sexual violence as any other power-based violence, that it's not about sexual gratification. It is about controlling someone else through violence and through coercion and using that way to gain control over someone. and to prevent them from being able to report and feel safe and justified in reporting and being able to get justice is one of the primary goals of any predator. And, you know, as you mentioned, sexual assault does not discriminate, and so neither do we. And we serve about 16% of our clientele are adult men who are seeking our services. And you are absolutely correct, sir. It has nothing to do with being, in the term straight, gay, lesbian, anything along those lines. It's really a matter of a predator choosing them as prey and preying upon them.
Thank you, Keeley.
Thank you so much.
I think in this committee we've worked very hard to make sure that people who are victimized by other people get their voice and get the protection of the law as best we know how. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to add on the record, I'll end up adding my name as a co-sponsor, and I appreciate the bill sponsor bringing it forward. And I'm just reflecting back, you know, in my time being here, that there was a point in time we just didn't even talk about this openly. It was considered a taboo subject to even bring this up, much like a lot of sexual abuse is. And once again, it's a great step forward to bring it out into the light of day and have these conversations. And as was just alluded to by Keeley, that rape is a crime of power. And it doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is, it's a crime of power, one person dominating over another. And that's why it's so important that we address it, particularly when you're thinking about your work unit and what those long-term consequences are for people who are traumatized within their work unit. And so I appreciate you bringing this forward.
Any other questions, comments? Any motions? It's a little committee. Anybody want to?
Yep. Chairman, I move a committee substitute for SJR 20 from committee.
The N version?
N version with individual recommendations.
And no fiscal note. So, zero fiscal note, I'm sorry, zero. Is there any objection to moving the CS for Senate Joint Resolution number 20 as put before us in version N? Committee, individual recommendations? Seeing none, it goes to the next committee referral. So that is passed out. That brings us to the end of our day. On Friday, we will bring up House Bill 47, House Bill 218, and Senate Bill 201. Senate Bill 47 is injunction security. House Bill 218 by Senate Representative Chenault is sentencing an aggravator. And Senate Bill 201 by Senator Stedman is criminal trespass, which I intend to amend and debate. All right? With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.